before we go into the children's corner specifically, I wanted to ask you, what were you hired to do at QED?
Oh, they asked me just to put together a program schedule. So I guess I was the first program manager. But when the children's corner got going, and we, you know, angels rush in where, or that's just the opposite. Fools rush in where angels fear to tread. And somebody said, who wants to do a children's program? And so Josie and I said, well, we'll do it. And I said, well, how long do you think we should? Oh, we'll do an hour a day. Well, can you imagine producing an hour a day? And so I just combed the country for free films that we could put in. And all we had planned to do was that Josie would sing some songs, I would play the organ for her to sing, and then she would introduce these films. I mean, we had such things as How You Grow Grass in New Hampshire or something that, can you imagine the amount of material that you'd need for an hour a day? At any rate, the puppets, I think, saved us because, well, Daniel Tiger made his appearance that very first day, but after a while, he became such a part of it because he and Josie would talk with Daniel as if that was the only person in the room. I mean, it was just magical the way they would converse, and it was all ad lib. She would tell him her problems, and he would listen. And so we thought, well, why don't we try some other characters? So the next one that we tried was a king. Now, I had this king puppet at home. Of course, these big ones were all made later by the people at NBC. And that's another story when we would go to NBC on the weekends. But the king came, and he was very sad because he had lost his country.
I've lost my country, and I would like some suggestions as to what my country would be.
And his name was King Friday the 13th. We just thought that was fun because so many people are so superstitious about Friday the 13th that we thought, let's start children out thinking that Friday the 13th is a fun day, and every Friday the 13th would be his birthday. So we would celebrate his birthday every time a Friday the 13th came. And that's what was so wonderful about being live. When a Friday the 13th came, you knew it, and it wasn't on tape.
At any rate, I said to the people, would you kindly suggest a name for my new country?
And so the children would write in what they thought the name of his country should be. And one little boy wrote in and said, well, if your name is King Friday the 13th, your country should be Calendar Land. So,
yes, so that boy, we called that boy and said, you may come to Calendar Land and I will make you a prince.
And so he dubbed this boy Prince. And we did all sorts of things.
If you'll excuse me, I have an important meeting.
Yes, certainly.
Excuse me, Karen.
Here we're back to whimsy.
And you were doing this with your other duties as a programmer?
Yeah. I mean, I'll never forget the Kilty Band that came from Carnegie Tech, which is now Carnegie Mellon. And they filled up the studio one evening. And of course, as you know, everything's live. And they filled it up and they started to play. And I was in the control room with the director. And none of the camera people, they played so loud. This is the bagpipes. They played so loud that the camera people couldn't hear what the director was in the booth was saying. And so he just would make gestures like this, move the camera this way or this way. And, well, these early days are really challenging and fun. There was one day that we were missing a cameraman. Somebody was sick. They went out on the sidewalk and brought somebody in. One of the Pitt students was walking by, and they said, "Would you come and help us?" And he said, "What do you want me to do?" And they said, "Oh, just run camera."
Can you do it?
Sure, he did it. He did it fine. I mean, you know, you learn by doing, and we all did a lot.
Talk about meeting Josie Carey. How did you two get together?
Well, she was working at the station. She was working with Leonore Elkus, and she was her assistant. And I think that Mrs. Daniel had seen Josie in productions at the Pittsburgh Playhouse. She had done some children's productions there, and I think eventually wanted to go in and do children's programming. And so Mrs. Daniel hired her for what there was to do, and that was to be Leonore Elkus's assistant. But of course, when the children's corner got going, Josie was plenty busy. And we had a wonderful working relationship. She was a great lyricist, and she would work and work on words, and then she'd hand them to me, and I'd write melodies for them.
What were some of the songs that you two wrote?
"I Think I'm Going to Like Today," "I Think I'll Call It Fine," "I'll Wrap It in Ribbons and Make It Mine," "I Think I'm Going to Like Today," "And When Today Is Through, I'll Catch It and Keep It as Good as New." "There It'll Be, You'll Have the Nicest Day in the Neighborhood, the Nicest Day in the Calendar, the Nicest Day Will Just Stay at Home with Me, I Think I'm Going to Like Today." And we wrote together the "Why Hi, Don't I Know You, Why Hi, I'm Sure I Do," and of course that was the beginning of the Children's Corner. "Why Hi, You Know Me Too, Why Hi, How Do You Do, Why Hi, I'm Josie, Why Hi, How Do You Do," and that's what she sang that every day. And then we wrote some very serious songs. We wrote "Good Night God, and Thank You for This Very Lovely Day. Thank you too for helping us at work and at our play. Thank you for our families, for each and every friend. Forgive us, please, for anything we've done that might offend. Keep us safe and faithful, God. Tell us what to do. Good night, God, and thank you, God, for letting us love you." And many kids sang that before they went to sleep at night.
Families. Is that something that you could do, a song? Because could you do a lot of religious type songs? And
not on public broadcasting now, I wouldn't think. I don't think that would be allowed.
But back then you didn't get any.
Back then everything was possible, you know? In fact, we sang "Good Night God" on the Children's Corner at NBC on one of those Saturday programs. And they called us in and said, "We think it better that you not mention God on the program." And I said, "Well, then I don't think we'll come back." And they had a lot of viewers for our program, so they rescinded that. But at any rate, you can be an agent of what's good and not have to be terribly direct about it. We have a song on the neighborhood that says, "There are many ways to say I love you. There are many ways to say I care about you. Many ways, many ways, many ways to say I love you." And there are. And one of the ways is working as well as you can to bring to others what you feel can be nourishing in their lives. It's an offering of love, what we do.
Talk a little bit about the format of the Children's Corner.
You know, before we do that, my next thought was, how many clothes can you wear? How many cars can you drive? how big of a shelter do you really need? Some people get so caught up in the trappings of life. At least I feel that that they lose what is real. And so my desire is to help children realize that deep and simple are far, far more important than shallow and complicated and fancy.
You wrote a song about that too.
Well, everybody's fancy, sure. We're all fancy on the inside and the outside. You know more about the neighborhood than I do. You should be the one talking about it.
Well, let's talk a little about the format of the Children's Corner for those who may not have seen it.
Yes, well, Josie sang the opening song, and then she showed pictures that kids had sent in. It was very local. A very local program. And again, the medium is so personal, people felt that they knew us all. And I sat behind the set at the organ and played for Josie to sing, and then I would run to the set where she and the puppets places were and poke the puppets through the hole. And that's why I started wearing tennis shoes. Those sneakers, because I didn't want to make noise as I would run across the studio. So I was always in those sneakers. And that was long before the children, or before the neighborhood. I was comfortable in sneakers. And so after King Friday came, I can tell you one thing about King. One day, Gertrude Berg, who was Molly Goldberg on commercial television, she came to visit. She was doing some personal appearance in Pittsburgh, and so she came into the studio. We were live from 5 to 6, and she came into the studio with this long sable coat on. And we had seen her on television as Molly Goldberg, and we thought, oh, we're afraid she's not going to be like we thought she was, you know, on the air. Well, she got into the studio, and she ripped off this coat, and she said, "Who lives over there?" And she went to Henrietta's tree, and she gave Henrietta, and they exchanged their favorite recipes for blintzes. And then she pointed to the king's castle. Yes, I'll always remember that. She pointed to the castle and said, "Who lives down there?" And Josie said, "King Friday the 13th. She said, "I want to meet him." And so they came down to the castle, and the king came out, and there was this fanfare, and he came out, and he looked at Gertrude Berg, and he said, "Have you ever been presented at court before, Miss Berg?" And she looked at the king and she said, "Only night court, Your Majesty." Yes, that was very clever of her, and I understood it, of course. Yes, now I shall make my leave, another important meeting.
Now, was that totally unrehearsed?
It was all unrehearsed. We had an idea of where we might like to go with the storyline, but most of it was unrehearsed.
And as far as your puppetry went, how did you have a monitor or anything? Could you see what you were doing?
Mm-hmm. Yes, if you don't have a monitor behind the set, why, you could just be blind. But I didn't have a monitor here today, so I don't know whether the king was looking at you or the, at any rate. I still feel very comfortable. In fact, when I worked in the master's program of child development and worked with children at the university school, I would give them a lot of different puppets to play with, and many times it would help me to know what they were thinking by the choice of the puppet that they made. If they chose the king, well, they might want to feel authoritarian at that moment and make some pronouncements. If they chose Daniel Tiger, they might be feeling quite shy. But there was a whole array of puppets, and children, just from here to here, seemed so much safer having the puppet say what the child was feeling rather than the child himself at first. And we found that a very, very helpful tool. I mean, it's a lot easier, even as an adult, for me to have Daniel say,
"I'm really scared. Do you think maybe you could give me a hug?"
You know, that would be hard for me to say, "I'm really scared. Do you think you could give me a hug?" So the difference from here to here, that doesn't seem very far, but it was efficacious, to say the least, in that working with children.
How much of you were in those puppets' personalities?
Oh, I think a lot. You know, I think every one of them has a facet of me. Lady Lane, certainly, the mischief maker, the fun maker. X the Owl's the adolescent. You know, "Oh, listen, I love flying around here." He needs to go to an optometrist. "Oh, I love flying around this place. I've been looking for you all. You came from California, didn't you?" "And where'd you come from? New York?" "Oh, good." He just went like that. "I'll tell you, this television business, isn't it fun?" Anyway, when X came, he didn't have a place to live. And so what we suggested to him was that he find an acorn. And so he went, found an acorn, and we scotch taped it to the bottom of the set. And every day, the art crew would paint a little more of the tree. And finally, the tree was completely painted on the set. We had a knot hole, opened the knot hole, and X came through.
How long did that take?
You must ask Josie. I'm not sure. It probably took a week or so. She has a wonderful memory.
How was the original set created? As far as, you know, you had the castle and everything there without the puppets, is that correct? Or did, as the puppet was introduced, their home was introduced? How did that work?
It was just a fanciful set. And I remember there was something that looked like a queen doing something, but there was no tree, there was no castle. The only thing that was there was a cuckoo clock. And of course, we incorporated that for Daniel. But the rest of it was just fancy-free. And I think it may have been Ernie Coombs who helped to design it. Now, Ernie Coombs was the person who was in our art department here. Sometimes Josie was late in the later years because she had a commercial program downtown in Pittsburgh that was live, and she would rush out to here to be on the air at 5, I believe. And so I would call Ernie in the art department, and I'd say, "Ernie, Josie's not here yet. Will you come upstairs and help us start the program?" And so he would come up and sing the song and do what was needed with the puppets, and then Josie would come in as soon as she arrived. Well, Ernie, when I was asked to go to Canada to do the neighborhood, wasn't called the neighborhood then. They called it Mr. Rogers. At any rate, I asked him if he would come and help me be my assistant puppeteer. And he came, and when I left Canada, they didn't want me to go, but we wanted to raise the boys in the United States, and so we came back, and I said, well, why don't you build a program around Ernie? And so that's how Mr. Dress-Up came to be. And Ernie Coombs stayed for 25 years after that.
Describe Mr. Dress-Up.
Mr. Dress-Up would change clothes and put all kinds of things on, and he had his own puppets that somebody else voiced. But hopefully you'll talk with Ernie, because he would be a great part of the history to talk with. He's a wonderful person, and I'm so proud of him. He brought real grace to children's programming in Canada.
Did you ever appear on camera on the Children's Corner?
Josie will probably tell you that she and I gave dancing lessons, but I had a mask on, and I think that she called me Prince Charming, and I just kind of arrived, and we tried to show the children how to do little ballroom dancing sets. I'm not sure that I spoke, but I don't remember. But that would have been the only time that I was on camera.
Did you have any desire to be on camera?
No. And so when I got to Canada, Fred Rainsbury, who was head of the children's programming there, said, I want you to be on camera. I've seen you talk with kids. And I said, oh, Fred, I thought you wanted me to come and do puppets and music, which is what I've always... He said, no. You can do that too, but I want you to look into the lens and just pretend that that's a child. And we'll just call it Mr. Rogers. Let's just do that. I mean, talk about foresight. Fred Rainsbury was a wonderful man. He was a professor of philosophy at the University of Toronto, but he also was head of children's programming for the CBC, the English network.
What do you think he saw in you?
I don't know. He gave me... now, what was that book? Was it Childhood and Society? But he gave me one of the first books that I read in the field of child development. So he really knew. And Margaret McFarland, who later became our major consultant, said, Fred, I watched the Children's Corner. I watched your early programming. And sure, now you're sophisticated as far as the child development themes are concerned, but you were always in touch with your own childhood. And she said, and that is the greatest prerequisite for what you're doing. And it makes me think now that parents who are watching with their children, watching our neighborhood with their children, if the neighborhood re-evokes their own childhood, you know, when they were watching, that could be one of the greatest gifts that we're giving the next generation. Because if they're in touch with who they were as children, they'll be able to be far more empathic with their own children. That's something really important.
What kind of thoughts did you give at the time for Children's Corner about education and sort of curriculum and that kind of thing?
I think Josie would probably tell you, we just went into the studio and had fun. And again, we're talking about being enthusiastic about healthy things. I mean, she and Daniel would have just wonderful conversations about a flower. You know, to be enthusiastic about something that somebody else might learn to love, that's what a gift, you know? I mean, what are your hobbies, for instance? Do you have a hobby?
Many, yes.
What?
Many, yes.
Many. Yeah. But for instance, one.
Writing.
Writing. Well, if you can be really enthusiastic to some young person who is just learning to write and say, "Do you know what this means to me? I feel just thrilled every time I can turn a phrase," and it's a blessing. It's a blessing to pass on something that you love to somebody else. That there isn't anything better. There isn't any better gift.
There was another portion of the show, The Attic. tell me about that.
That was the very first thing we produced. It was on that night, that April 1st night. It was the only segment that we had ready to go for the Children's Corner. These were pieces of furniture that came alive when Josie went to visit them. And there was rhododendron and philodendron. These were just potted plants. And philodendron, let me see, this is the way philodendron talked. And rhododendron was my wife. We all did recordings of these things. And Josie was foo-foo fish, just a kind of a rubber fish. Oh, talk about primitive. There was Grandma Victoria Olafone. It was gramophone. And she got converted into a television set. And the director did her voice. John Ziegler did her voice. Oh, there were funny cats. There was Teop, which was a mouse. It was a puppet. But that's poet spelled backwards. And everything that he said was in poetry.
Were those scripted?
They were scripted. Those were completely scripted, yeah. And in fact, Josie wrote a lot of those scripts.
Were those filmed?
They were funny. Pardon me?
Were they filmed or were those also live?
We did them live.
Let's stop here to change the tape.